everybody. This is Chuck Marone. Welcome to the Upzone podcast. This week, Kia is out enjoying a little bit of biking vacation. And I said, I'll try to fill your shoes on the Upzone podcast. And she said, give it a try, you sad man. No, she was kind. She said, give it a try and we'll fill that slot. And I thought, I've got an article here I want to talk about. It is about a pedestrian law being proposed in Honolulu. And I thought, who better to chat about that particular article and upzone it than my friend Don Kostelek. Don is with Vitruvian Planning. He's out of Boise, Idaho. He is one of my go-to guys online, particularly on Twitter. You know how Twitter is kind of a mad place? Don's actually one of these guys who uses it to give really valuable insight and information about different sites. He's not in Boise today. He's in Oregon doing some interesting work, but he pulled over and agreed to jump on the phone with us. Don, welcome to the Upzone podcast.
Thanks, Chuck.
You had a chance to look at this article in Honolulu. They want to pass an ordinance that would limit, I'll say jaywalking, even though the article doesn't say jaywalking. It actually is more restrictive than walking mid-block. They actually say you can't walk at an intersection if it's unmarked after dark. What are they trying to do here with this particular code?
Well, Chuck, if you remember 2 years ago, they also passed the law related to looking at your phone while crossing the street.
I remember that. Yeah.
Even applied to, you know, traffic signals and when you have the walk signal. And it's interesting, as I started to break this down, I mean, my first response just on based on what we see and what we know is like, well, do the roadways even give people a chance to abide by this law? And we see it all the time in our professions of, well, go to the nearest marked crosswalk or go to the nearest signal. And it doesn't matter if it's 3,000 feet away. That's our expectation for it. And in kind of perusing Street View and talking to a couple people I know that have been to Honolulu, you know, they kind of compared it to like a mini LA in a lot of ways. And, you know, you see couplet roadways, you see high speed turning radii. You see diagonal curb ramps that maximize pedestrian crossing and pedestrian exposure. And again, so I just immediately come to this sense of this is a law meant to address something where the engineering of the roads and the planning of the road network don't really align with that. And then the other funny part, when you read this article and you read the ordinance, it specifies arterial roadways and traffic volumes greater than 15,000 ADT. And the immediate thing that comes to mind is what? I'm going to fly to Honolulu. And the first thing you're going to do is put a lei around my neck and hand me a copy of the functional classification map.
Right, right.
I mean, who walks around their community? Oh, this is an arterial. Therefore, it trips this requirement in my head to walk, you know, to whatever the next thing is and cross. Or I don't know. What about you, Chuck? Do you think this is a 15,000 ADT road? No, I think it's only 13,000. I think we're good crossing here. And so when you look at the underlying pieces of this ordinance, I'm like, did a knee-jerk city council member get together with a traffic engineer and come up with these parameters? To me, it's just not on its surface based in those realities.
I feel like you're getting at an important point here, which is that human behavior doesn't work the way these things are designed to have them work. You point out, by the letter of this law, if it takes effect, you may have to walk thousands and thousands of feet on a road or on a strode or a street that at the time you're doing this walking has very little, if any, traffic. Yet, you know, you're required to walk this great distance to cross to be legal, you know, to avoid the $100 fine. Why are we in an instance like this so kind of blind to the way humans actually use things? I mean, you would think the people doing this are human themselves. I mean, why are humans such a mystery to us? Because I don't know anyone who would walk 3,000 feet to cross somewhere when there's no cars in either direction and you could just walk across the street.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to, and you brought up in the beginning, the Twitterverse and our exchange of ideas and stuff there. And you've probably seen that hashtag of windshield bias or windshield perspective. And I think a lot of it stems from that. And it was interesting back when they passed the law about the distracted walking, and everybody that we kind of run in circles with online and professionally just had this guttural reaction over it. And was interesting, I also tend to take things like this and go and look at other laws in place. And when they passed that one, I went and said, well, gosh, what's the expectations of drivers in Hawaii? And actually, Hawaii has some of the strongest distracted driving laws in the country, both in how they're written and penalty wise. Like, okay, well, maybe there's, you know, they're kind of getting at something from equal sides. And I even looked at and found some Hawaii DOT pedestrian safety stuff online. And this one was interesting. It was Drive Wise Hawaii, Driver's Pledge. I pledge as a good driver to always be aware that pedestrians can be hidden from view by stopped vehicles on multi-lane streets. And then in there under the pedestrian tips for drivers, and this is another point I want to make, when driving between dusk and dawn, watch for pedestrians in dark clothing. Always use your headlights. Now think about that in contrast to what we see from a lot of the messages basically telling us what color clothing we should wear. And at least in this flyer from Hawaii DOT, they're kind of taking a more pragmatic approach. So it's why I'm kind of interested to see what happens next with this. And my colleague, Chris Danley, as we're both driving back to Boise from Seattle today, we're talking about this and trying to play devil's advocate on it and go, you know what? In that law, they do talk about this 300-foot distance and intersection spacing. And when you get into the ITE manuals on walkable communities and things, they talk about 200, 300, 600-foot block spacing. And we were just kind of brainstorming that if I was an advocate in Honolulu and had this awful feeling about this thing, it's like, well, one, I'm using it to advocate for more frequent protected crossings on those roads. If you're expecting us to only do it in these circumstances, then it's our expectation that you redesign these roads to give us those opportunities, right?
Yeah, I'm following you.
And we also said, well, gosh, I'm also asking for Hawaii in and of itself to revisit their own state-approved version of the manual on uniform traffic control devices and go, well, then if you're putting this expectation, we also need to rethink this, you know, magic 20 pedestrians an hour warrant for an upgrade to a crossing or some type of signalization. Because now if your law is going to put this on it, then I fully expect you to design roads that give me opportunities to actually abide by that law.
Pause there for a second, because I think there might be a couple of people who don't understand what a warrant is and how that applies to a situation like this. I was once a young traffic engineer out counting people crossing and cross traffic to try to justify a signal warrant at one place. Talk a little bit about what a warrant is and why that is an actual thing that is this is a threshold you have to cross.
Well, historically looking at the type of traffic, mostly the foundation of motorized traffic, to justify something like a traffic signal, you want to have enough vehicles coming from a side street to justify a traffic signal due to a lot of factors, volume and gaps in traffic. And part of that is, one, a compliance factor. If you have a stop sign and the conditions aren't there, people will ignore the stop sign. If you have a traffic signal there and the conditions aren't right for it, people will ignore it. I think we've inadvertently and wrongly transferred a lot of that thinking into pedestrian signal warrants to say, and there's a couple different measures in there, but kind of the common one everybody defaults to is 20 pedestrians willing to cross in a 1 hour period to justify a signal. And while I understand if I'm going to go invest $125,000 in a full traffic signal with the typical, you know, red, yellow, green, the mast arms, the cabinets, I can understand to some degree wanting to get to some level of volume to justify that expenditure in that situation. But what I would love to see in the update of our traffic engineering standards, now that we have rapid flash beacons and pedestrian hybrid beacons and these lower cost treatments, well, maybe we don't have to meet those thresholds that were based on a way of thinking 20, 30, or 50 years ago. So when I then talk about Hawaii revisiting that, when people hear of federal standards related to MUTCD, they may not know that every state also adopts their own version of MUTCD or their version of modifications to meet state-specific things that they've maybe been doing for years or preferences. So there is some leeway at the state DOT levels to modify things in MUTCD. So when I go back and say, if I'm an advocate in Honolulu and I want this, that's a point of emphasis I'm trying to make, is rethink that warrant. Because if you're going to make me do this, then we shouldn't have to have 20 people willing to risk their lives in an hour to meet your law.
20 people breaking the law.
Yeah,
an hour. Exactly. Right. I understood what you said earlier about the symmetry of distracted driving laws and distracted walking laws and how there's a certain logical consistency in that. I respect that. I mean, I think there is some sense, and you made a very good point. I want to push you a little bit on it because I want you to talk about the symmetry of design. From an engineering standpoint and a traffic standpoint, we have certain design parameters we're searching for. One of them is to reduce travel time. A lot of what we're trying to do is make it easier for traffic to flow through an area and for you to get from point A to point B more quickly and more efficiently. How does the symmetry of design or lack of it apply when we're talking about non-auto-based trips, particularly in a situation like this in Honolulu? Are we seeing symmetry, or is that not extend to actually how we design spaces?
Well, funny how you said that, because in my own thought process, I push myself on that because, yes, all things being equal, road design, vehicle design, other safe systems or Vision Zero approaches, that parallel expectation from a distraction standpoint on the surface would be fine. But no, you raised the exact point, and you've probably seen me, I put it in blog posts and on Twitter. Shared responsibility isn't a valid expectation until vulnerable road users are given equal opportunity to move safely throughout the system. And if you go at it from that premise, you soon realize, well, we're just expecting pedestrians to stay off their phone the same as drivers. Well, nothing else in the system is meant to equalize that transaction for them. And even a note I made in this, when they talk about the dawn to dusk, and that was that Insurance Institute for Highway Safety study that finds that we still only have about 50% of the vehicles manufactured in this country that have headlights rated adequate or good. So again, you're not doing anything in Hawaii to require motorists to upgrade their headlights to make things more visible. I don't see something in there, and if I'm missing it, I apologize, for upgrading lighting overhead at crosswalks to make up for that. But we're more than happy to tell pedestrians what to do. So that's where I think this equivocation that we think is there starts to deviate. And heck, I now watch the independent vehicle reviews from IIHS, and you find like a $50,000 BMW SUV, you can only upgrade to headlights rated as adequate by getting a higher trim level. So what's coming stock on our vehicles isn't even adequate enough to light up the road ahead, yet we're acting like this is a pedestrian visibility and crossing problem.
So the impetus for this in Honolulu is that they want to improve protection for pedestrians and motorists, they say. We want to keep everyone safer. In a Don Kostelec world, if someone came to you from Honolulu and said, we've got this problem, people are getting hit, they're getting injured, they're getting killed, we want to deal with this problem, where do you start instead of here? What's the low-hanging fruit in your mind?
Well, first of all, I would cynically say they're outsourcing safety to an ordinance that is confusing and weird in terms of, well, here's this functional classification standard. I think that article also talked about law enforcement being opposed to this because then it becomes judgmental. Well, was it 31 minutes before dusk? And we were also talking, when you look at like the physics of a crash and how far a pedestrian is thrown when hit by a motorist, how do they make that determination if that crossing was being attempted outside this 300-foot sphere or whatever they're defining? And so to me, if they had to say a true Vision Zero approach, hey, we realize there's a problem here. There's lots of factors. We're going to go in and give pedestrians more frequent crossings. We're going to tighten up turning radii. We are going to look differently at crossing warrants to put in more frequent treatments and follow some of those guidelines from ITE and even ASHTO on the frequency of pedestrian spacing. And then if you have a system that looks like that, or maybe it's a zone, maybe it's Waikiki Beach, maybe it's downtown Honolulu, that you go in and do that first and then enact an ordinance when you've given them equal treatment to safety and mobility within the system, then maybe we can talk about the validity of a law like that. I think that's how I'd look at it.
Yeah. Did you notice that, I think it was their police chief or their mayor, someone said that the bill they're looking to pass is patterned on one from Springfield, Missouri, which I don't know. I have not had the chance to go to Honolulu. I've been to Springfield, Missouri. I don't know if I would pattern my my pedestrian safety things off of Springfield, Missouri. I don't know if you have a thought on that. I'm just piling on poor Springfield.
That's not the same Springfield we were talking about in Massachusetts with the library last time I was on.
No.
So maybe there's a pattern there that we're...
Maybe there's a Springfield pattern, yeah.
But no, it's funny, like in that realm, so much of what we do in this world on that level is actually unique. We're all plagiarizing from other places. And for some reason, we tend to do that with policy. We tend to do that with design guidance. And we never think about the actual context of the place we're in. And maybe, like I said, maybe there is something in Waikiki Beach because of bars and other stuff and a tight grid network where there are plenty of opportunities to cross, that a law like that might be considerate of the system that's in place. But a citywide ordinance on that with a place like Honolulu, to me, it just doesn't apply.
I feel like, you know, you being from Boise, which has a good, healthy winter, my being from Minnesota here, which, you know, at times the winter can get a little difficult, I kind of feel like this coming winter, you and I should go to Honolulu and check this out for ourselves.
It's a business write-off. I don't think they're going to pay for us to be there, but maybe we can figure that out somehow.
Okay. We have this thing we do on the Upzone podcast where we shift into the down zone for a brief moment of time at the end and talk about whatever you're reading or watching or listening to. I wonder if you've got something you want to share, Don, that you've been into lately, digging in that people might find interesting.
Well, I've been thrilled both with the announcement in recent weeks of your book, and then if you saw the stuff this week from Angie Schmidt at Streets Blog of her drilling into the pedestrian one. And I'm working on a concept of one to outline that is really meant to break down the myths in the traffic engineering and highway engineering world and these things we've been told, so we can arm advocates that when you hear something about a 12-foot lane being sacred, to arm you with the fact that, no, it's not sacred. And here's the background of that. So in my nerdiness, my reading recently has been on things like the legal antecedents of some of this road design stuff and where, you know, trying to find old copies of things like MUTCD and Green Book to realize we've kind of ended up with this Winchester mystery house of road design standards that aren't. So I've been trying to do a lot of background and historical research to figure out those things, to kind of document it for this little hands-on myth busting book that I have in my head.
You're like a biblical scholar, but in the road Bible.
I wouldn't go that far, but yeah, maybe so. More like transportation forensics of like what's led to us killing so many people. It may be more of a CSI / biblical scholar.
CSI road design.
Moniker.
Yeah.
There you go.
I like it. So here's what I'm doing for the down zone tonight. We're recording this on Wednesday. It comes out on Friday. Last week, Thursday, Friday, the last Avengers movie, the Endgame, came out. And I have been kind of trying to stay off of social media. I've got a really good friend that we're going to go to the movie tonight. Tonight's the night we could go together. And we've gone to a whole bunch of these Marvel movies together. And this is kind of the penultimate. And we've both been avoiding all the spoilers. And it's 2:30 in the afternoon. And we're going in 4.5 hours. I haven't heard one yet. So I'm I'm going to shut everything off and try not to hear any spoilers. Are you a movie person or a Marvel person?
Not really either in some regards. My problem is, and I went with my daughter to see Shazam a few weeks ago. And in that, there's the bully students pulling up and hitting the boy with their truck and him sending the thing up in the air. And then I'm the idiot that looks at period movies from like, say, the 1950s and go, wait a minute, there's a curb ramp with a yellow truncated dome. They didn't have that in the 1950s.
I know you. Yeah. I try really hard to suspend reality in that way. We've actually talked about starting a podcast because a bunch of us really like movies, where we just talked about kind of the urbanism of movies. Maybe we need to have you on that podcast to be like the spoiler guy who's like, you know, they really don't have that.
Yeah, that'd be fun. It's like I have to go to like much older movies or ones that have no cities or streets to not see work in what I do. It's probably the yin and the yang of what I do of being so passionate about this.
That's awesome. Well, I want to tell people, well, before we sign off here, Don Kostelec, you can get him on Twitter. And I'm seriously, like, if you're on Twitter and you're not following Don, you're missing a lot. Kostelec Plan, Plan. That's all Kostelec Plan on Twitter. Follow him because seriously, I'm like neck deep in this stuff. And Don, you're always posting things that I find interesting and add to my knowledge and also, you know, are fun and informative too. So thanks for doing that. And thanks for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I think maybe the way I just thought of this, the way for us to pay for that trip to Honolulu in the winter is print out and sell at the airport those functional classification maps for arriving pedestrians. That might finance the trip for us.
We could be part of the tourism department, basically.
There we go.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, friend. I'll talk to you later.
Oh, you're welcome.
Take care. Hey, and thanks everybody for listening to The Upzone. Kia will be back next week, and I promise you a better show. No, that was okay. I love Don. He's so great. Kia will be back next week, and she'll take charge, and everything will be back to normal the way it should be. In the meantime, keep listening and keep doing what you can to build a strong town. Take care.